From Orange County, California, you are listening to Taking Flight with Captain Michael Rocket Blackstone. That almost sounds like a fake name. Maybe Marvel's next superhero? Might want to check into that. This is a different type of aviation podcast that is not hosted by a tech geek know-it-all or communist sympathizing wacko, no. Lucky for you, I am your host. With over 30 years and 30,000 hours of flying high-performance aircraft all over the world, 21 years at a major airline, and with over 25 years in the extremely challenging flying business, I hope to become your personal coach to get you started in your career in aviation as a pilot and to help you identify and survive this industry's many pitfalls and booby traps along the way. This podcast is my personal commitment to helping you succeed in making your dreams of flying for a living or as a hobby come true. We're trying to avoid that happening to your career, because that's gotta hurt. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Taking Flight with Michael Rocket Blackstone. We are in episode number 11, but to rehash what happened yesterday, episode number 10, we did an episode on the art of flying fighters. But today's episode, we're going to be talking about why I love fighters so much. And it always can boil back to my childhood and take us all the way back to 1986, 34 years ago. My dad introduced me to fighter planes back in Fullerton, California, where I'm at right now and talking to you from my living room and beautiful sunset here. And I just love harking back on this. As I look back over these 34 years and 70,000 missions that my dad has been able to accomplish with his company called Air Combat USA, I've had the joy and the privilege of being able to fly those aircraft with him, for him, all over the country, teaching people about this art of air-to-air combat. Now, let me clarify something here. I've never been in the military flying fighter planes, so the only fighter experience I have is what I learned at Air Combat USA as a 14, 15-year-old boy who was taught to fly these fighter planes, the aircraft, which I'll get into in just a minute, by the guys who taught my dad how to do it in the late 80s, early 90s. And these guys were Top Gun pilots from Miramar back in the day when Miramar, California had the Naval Fighter Weapons School Top Gun, which I'm sure many of you remember. The movie Top Gun with Tom Cruise, the original, and we're super excited about the new one that's coming out in June of 2021. But the original movie came out in 1986. And as a child, as a young boy, aspiring aviator, wanted to be like my dad and live this cool, wild, adventurous life of aviation, I would just get to go to the movies a lot with my dad, and we would go watch Top Gun, and I'm sure you could probably imagine that we really did go see it, I believe 40 or 50 times, paid for it to go to the movie and watch this movie and be just blown away by the visuals and the soundtrack of the jets and just the cool factor. What I loved most about the movie Top Gun, not necessarily the storyline, and I know some of the backstory of how it got made and some of the glitches and things that happened along the way, and there's always challenges associated with making a flying movie, especially something that seems to be so difficult to capture visually, and then capture any kind of story that's going to make any sense, and then put it all together. And Jerry Bruckheimer has done this, and I'm sure he's going to do it again. We're super excited about the new one, but he did it beautifully with 1986 technology. Everything had to be for real. It had to be shot. So that's what made that movie, I think at that time, so revolutionary, was the access to these jets, the way to film them with these IMAX cameras and huge cameras at the time, to really capture the magic and the beauty of flying. Now, did they really capture what dogfighting is like? No, absolutely not. There's not a lot of realism in the way that Top Gun really played out, but it captured the public's imagination, and it captured our imagination, especially me as a 15-year-old, but my dad's imagination as well. And he was an airline pilot at the time, flying full-time airline. And this was always something that he had secretly wanted to have been. He wanted to fly fighters, and he had an opportunity to join the Air Force in the Vietnam days. I believe it was like 1970, 71. And the war was spooling down, and there really wasn't going to be any more combat, and he would have joined the Air Force and kind of missed the window, and everybody wanted to go on to the airlines at that time. So he took that routing when he had an opportunity to go to the Air Force, to fly F-4s for the United States Air Force, to go to the airlines. And he went into TWA, I believe it was actually World Airways, excuse me. So it was World Airways was his first airline. I wasn't born yet, but that was the first airline that he went to. But back in his mind, he wanted to always be a fighter pilot. Now, once you saw Top Gun, I think many of us realized that we wanted to be fighter pilots, or want to be fighter pilots if you're young enough to pull it off. The magic and mystique of flying these super technologically advanced, high horsepower, huge engines, amazing armament and weaponry. And this thing is like a spaceship from Star Wars. This thing's a spaceship from Battlestar Galactica or something. They go fast. They go 1,000 miles an hour. They pull 9 Gs. These guys wear this great gear. They got G suits on, and helmets and life vests on, and parachutes and boots. It's just awesome. And so these guys look like superheroes. It's from our standpoint as kids in the 80s, the Top Gun movie turned pilots into superheroes, into rock stars. And that really was such a shot in the arm for aviation. And we're looking forward to that happening again with the new one. But this movie really captivated our imagination and my dad's imagination to really put his brain on. He's an aerospace engineer, and he went to Cal Poly Pomona and learned about aerospace and science. And he wanted to fly airliners, fighters, and maybe even a spacecraft. Or, you know, at that time it was the the moon flying up to, late early 70s. And then, of course, the space shuttle came out. Like, wouldn't it have been great to have been able to fly SR-71 or something really fast, and maybe some X plane, the X-1 goes supersonic. And see, all of these things were happening during his time in his life, was the breaking of the sound barrier and going to the moon. And then this movie Top Gun comes out, and he couldn't contain himself. So what he did was he invested all of his money, his retirement money, into buying a military fighter trainer. And he had to choose. And there were a lot of fighter planes out there, and old vintage ones, and radial engine ones, and two seat this and one seat that, and what's it going to be? And after some long drawn out analysis, he came up with the Marchetti SF-260, and the original designation of it was CISIAI Marchetti, and I believe it's now owned by a company called Leonardo or Aeromachi. I believe it's an Italian company that's purchased the CI operation. So it's an Italian fighter plane designed to be a trainer for many air forces, and a frontline fighter for many countries around the world use this airplane as their frontline light attack aircraft. Now, he purchased this plane because it would go fast. It actually holds the record for the fastest single engine piston airplane in its weight class, and it's maneuverable, and it's a fighter plane. It actually has hard points and bomb racks, and it's really a legit fighter plane. It's not just a Cessna 172 or a Cherokee 140 painted in camouflage and put a gun sight on it and hope for the best. It actually is a fighter plane. So he loved that about it. It was available. There were quite a few of them available. I believe the ones that we bought initially came from Africa, but they were imported through a guy who I think has now passed away in Texas. Frank Strickler, I believe, was his name. And he found one of these things, and I believe it was a 1979 C model November 16 Foxtrot Delta, and he found a second one, a 78 or 79 C model also, and it was November 14 Foxtrot Delta, and he bought a pair of these things. Well, when the news got wind of what we were doing with these airplanes and what we were going to do with these airplanes, it started to really, really catch on. But his passion was always in the back of his mind that he wanted to fly fighters. Then he bought these things, and then he needed to start getting them ready to perform, to take other people up, and to retrofit them so that they could legally take customers like you and I, and anybody who's ever wanted to fly a fighter plane or ever dreamed of flying a fighter plane can fly with him or one of his Top Gun fighter pilots, or Air Force, or Marine Corps. Sorry, guys. Also, those guys would be able to ride in the right seat and instruct someone who's never flown in a plane before in this amazing thing that Top Gun made cool, this dogfighting competition of one versus one. We call it BFM, and we'll talk about that a little later, but basic fighter maneuvers, or air combat maneuvering, or ACM, dogfighting. And what this dogfighting world was something that no one really had ever seen before, and couldn't really imagine it. You might see a couple of peel-aways, a couple of gun camera footages from World War II, maybe one little gun camera footage from Vietnam, but you really couldn't grasp what it was. And I think that Top Gun did a really good job in bringing to life some of what its features are, what it takes to do it, and some of the visuals and the cool factor, the tactics, not so much. But that, just remember, it's just really difficult to film. So it wasn't because they didn't want to, it's just because it's just difficult to capture these types of things in film. So we were able to look past that as pilots and see what it was really going to be, and then begin to work our way into the business of this. And now, we had no idea if there were other people out there that were as fascinated with BFM, dogfighting, air-to-air combat. Top Gun's cool, right? But are they ready to come out and do it? So we weren't sure. And my dad's attitude was, do what you love, get really good at it, and the money will find you. Or, if it doesn't work out, who cares? You know, so that was my dad's mentality, and it really works. And if you really think about it, what gets you up at 4:35 in the morning to go down to Chino Airport to work on retrofitting your 1979 Marchetti SF-260s to put gun sights in them, to work the wiring schematics, to set up a camera system, which at that time were massive. The cameras in 1986 were huge, and today they're like the size of your thumb or a little GoPro. But in those days, this was a huge camera that needed to be really worked into the geometry, to the weight and balance. I mean, this was kind of a difficult engineering task, but lucky for us, we had my dad, who was an aerospace engineer, and he could work the math on how to install all this stuff. And then we had hired fabricators who put the gun sight tracking system together and into the aircraft. And what that tracking system did, my dad patented this thing. So what he did was he created a way for when the attacking aircraft squeezes the trigger, that it begins to look for another aircraft out ahead at a certain distance between 500 and 1,000 feet in a certain cone, which would be like the control zone of a gun parameter of the simulated 20 millimeter cannons that we were trying to simulate on a Marchetti, which would be like something what would a P-51 Mustang would have. So we're simulating that by an electronic signal that when we squeeze the trigger, it's looking for the other airplane out front. It's looking. If it sees it, it says, oh, I've got it. After 3 seconds, it sends a signal back to the shooter, who hears a tone in his headset. Then the pilot squeezes the transmit button down so the other airplane can hear that, and that tone triggers the smoke system in the losing aircraft, the Defender's aircraft, his smoke system is activated automatically from the attacking aircraft's simulated bullets striking his aircraft. Brilliant. This was a brilliant design in 1986, and it really hasn't been duplicated since. I think there's been several others that have tried to do it or thought they were going to do it, and mostly they just put a little grease pencil on the windshield and just go for it and shoot the camera forward, and that's okay too, if you don't care. But my dad was always about the realism. He wanted it to sound like a gun. When you squeeze the trigger, you'd hear the 50 caliber machine guns coming through your headset. Or if he could have had his way, he would have put some sort of a jackhammer knocker under the seat, so like a stick shaker on a Boeing, that knocking sound, so it feels like you're being struck by lead under your seat to give you that tactile, visceral feel. And then the smoke goes off, and of course some of the smoke kind of comes in through the cockpit. You feel like you've been shot. What a cool experience. So without any bullets flying, without anybody getting hurt, flying through 60,000 of these missions over the last 34 years, my dad has changed the world and changed people's lives in a really positive way, of course, and brought air-to-air combat to the masses. So going into the BFM world, as we discuss this, you know, so we've got people who've never flown before. We're going into a brief. We're going to stand in front of a group of people, and I've done many, many, many of these briefings, and we'll stand in front of a whiteboard. We got a couple of models in our hands. I got a P-51 Mustang model in the right, a P-51 Mustang model in the left, and they're on a stick, a dowel. And what we'll do is we'll teach people the basics. And even if you've never flown a plane before in your life, we'll teach you the basics of how to fly an airplane. Okay, you're going to hold the stick in your right hand. You're going to hold on to the gun sight bar with your left. You're going to, you know, kind of relax in your seat, nice light grip. And when I tell you left on the stick, you're going to go left. When I tell you right on the stick, you're going to go right. When I tell you pull, 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 you're going to start squeezing back on the stick. And I'm going to teach you how to take the G's, and you're going to be a fighter pilot. As on your very first mission, you'll be hands-on in control of the airplane shortly after takeoff. Once we get safely airborne and get cleaned up, you fly the whole mission all the way out to the practice area where we begin doing our practice maneuvers. And as you look on YouTube, you look through YouTube, you can find Air Combat's videos. You can get a chance to see what these planes are like. You can see what the gun sights look like. You'll find a lot of our older footage on YouTube of Air Combat's flights from people who've flown, because we've obviously did a lot of camera work up there. And of course, those get transferred we give them to our clients, and then they put them up on their channel. So you'll find it out there. You'll find it on some of ours as well. And you can see what it's going to look like. Now, when you go to Wikipedia and you look at basic fighter maneuvers, you start scrolling, and it is long and complicated. And I read it again today, and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of stuff we teach. And I started reading through it. I'm like, yeah, we do that, and yeah, we do that. And yeah, this is a lot alike of what we do. But you got to remember that these are people who have never flown before, so they don't understand specific energy, and they don't understand some of the things that Wikipedia goes into that make this a little bit too tricky. So what we like to do is kind of break it down and to make it a little bit more simple. So the first thing people get to do when they start flying this airplane, of course, is be in formation. That gets the jitters out, sort of, and that gets them kind of relaxed a little bit, where they can be close enough to another airplane to see them and realize, gets their mind off of the dogfight part, and they can really just get used to what the airplane handles like. Now, the Marchetti SF-260 is a jet-like trainer. So it's not a jet. It's a piston-powered airplane. In other words, it runs on 100 low lead gas, like what you put in your street car. And it runs off of a propeller. The propeller on the front rotates at 2,700 RPM, and this thing makes 260 horsepower. And you think, well, that's not too crazy on the horsepower. It shouldn't be going too fast. But the 260 horsepower on a 2,400-pound airplane makes this sucker go 170 knots, which is nearly 190 miles per hour. Like Indy 500 speed. Like, this thing is moving almost 200 miles an hour. when we start cruising and dogfighting, right? So instantly you're in charge of or flying an Indy 500 aircraft, speed aircraft. And it's very maneuverable. Light on the controls. You can really make this thing roll quickly to the left, quickly to the right. And it puts the G's on relatively quickly. Now, the wing shape of a Marchetti is thin. And when I say thin, relative to what? At the thickest part, I'd say it's approximately 4, maybe 4.5 inches in the middle. Kind of thin. And that allows it to go fast. Thinner the wings, less drag. Fat wing, more drag. Well, if you want to turn like a unicycle, you'd want a nice big fat wing like the extra 300 has. If you want to go fast, though, you want a thin wing. So the Marchetti's got a relatively thin wing compared to anything else that that is out there in this size range. You see a Cherokee wing or a Bonanza wing or something like that. Cessna wings are kind of thick and kind of fat. This is much, much thinner. That helps it go fast. It's retractable gear. Just like all fighter planes and airliners these days, when you put the gear handle in the up position, the wheels disappear into the belly. That makes it go fast too. Takes away the drag. So what we're dealing with is this high-performance fighter plane. You're in control of it. And now we're heading out to the area where you're going to get a chance to practice doing some maneuvers. So the first thing we let you do is look through the gun sight. And back in the old days, that was what we did for quite a while, and put you right in trail of another aircraft, and then we'd say you're clear to maneuver, and the other airplane out front from 500 to 750 feet or so in front of you would begin to maneuver gently to the left and gently to the right, holding the turn for maybe 15, 20 seconds, so you have a little chance to kind of stabilize and get to see what it's like to fly and keep your gun sight honed in on a moving target. This is one of the most difficult things for a human being to do, which is deploy a gun at a moving target from a moving target. So kind of think about the complexity of that. It's like get on your motorcycle, grab your BB gun or your 9mm or whatever, and then go chase foxes in the woods with the gun in one hand, the foxes out front, and you're going to chase them and shoot them all at the same time. Really challenging. So what you're going to have to do is start to learn how to just relax. And it's almost like being a Jedi Knight. You can imagine Luke Skywalker out there with the goggles on and literally going by feel and predicting and planning and timing so you can get your plane to line up with the plane out in front of you and keep him stationary in your sight while he's moving and so are you. So the first step is to piperon, which is the dot in the center, on the fuselage of the other airplane, usually out in front, which is even better, but at least on the airplane to start, maybe towards the front end of the airplane, maybe towards the nose, and then align the horizontal bar of the gun sight. And when you look at the YouTube videos, you'll see that there's definitely a solid horizontal line going across the center of the gun sight. That lines up with the wing line of the aircraft you're trying to shoot. Those are the two basic features of shooting the gun. Piperon is where the bullets are going to go. Horizontal bar across the wings. And this aligns your wing line. The other thing we're going to work on, the third piece of this puzzle, is to align the fuselages of your machines. So going straight down vertically through your gun sight, you've got mills, or at least like a little ladder thing going down the middle. And that's straight up and down. That could represent your fuselage line. So if you line up the wings with the horizontal bar and then line up the fuselage with the vertical bar, you're sitting pretty good. Now, in order to shoot the gun between 500 and 1,000 feet, it's just squeeze the trigger. We don't run out of bullets in this environment, but in the real world, you go flying around holding the trigger down, you'd empty the gun in a matter of seconds. I think there's like 9 or 12 seconds of shooting time on any modern jet. It empties the gun fast at 600 rounds a minute or some crazy thing. So 100 rounds a second. So the point on this is just an exercise. Smooth finesse on the controls, follow him through, squeeze the trigger, hold it down till you count to 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. That would be a solid kill, and then the smoke would come on if we were really fighting. That's what you'd get. The next maneuver you need to learn how to do as a fighter pilot is what we call low and high yo-yos. These are like pursuit curves, but with a little bit more of a vertical aspect to it. So when someone's in a turn out in front of you, if I want to catch the guy ahead of me, what I'll do is I'll put my nose out in front of his. So I'll say guy, I really mean whoever's out there. It could be a gal, but guy meaning just the plane out in front. So if there's an airplane, a bad guy out in front of me in a left-hand turn, and I want to catch him, I'll put my nose out in front of them. So I'm at least, you know, 4, 5, 6 airplane lengths ahead, put my nose way out in front of him. And the farther distance I need to close, the bigger the lead I want to take. But let's just say I just need to close up a few hundred feet. So I'm going to go from 1500 feet to 500. So I'm going to put my nose out in front, maybe 3, 4, 5 airplane lengths ahead, ease forward on the stick and let the nose come down and descend and accelerate. So not only are we getting the acceleration of the dive, but we're getting the closure of the plane cutting across the circle. And we call this a lead pursuit and also a low yo-yo happening at the same time. That's going to help close the distance on the aircraft ahead. Once I get the distance nailed down and it looks pretty good, I can gently fade back into his turn circle with a slight right turn, kind of going back into a pure pursuit or lag pursuit. If I've got a little more closure than I want, I'll put my nose behind. If it's kind of looking pretty stable and solid, I might go straight to shooting from right there, which just bring my pipper up and squeeze the trigger. If I'm still closing, however, I need to do a little bit of a high yo-yo, which would be to climb up and outside of the aircraft I'm chasing's tail, so nose now behind, slightly lagging him or her, and pull up and slow down. And as I get the closure under control, we'll increase the bank angle back to the left, relaxing the pull, letting the nose settle back down onto the other aircraft, back into the gun sight now, looking for the bar to be across the wings, pipper on the other aircraft, and then mash the trigger down to get another practice run on squeezing and flying and shooting. That is the basics of running somebody down, getting the distance right, and shooting the gun. That's going to take a bunch of practice. So if you practice that every day, you get to be pretty smooth on it. It seemed pretty good. It's difficult enough just to do that. The next phase of this is the dogfight. So if you were to imagine, after both aircraft get a chance to practice that, now they separate and they go maybe a mile apart. Now this airplane is small. It's 27-foot wingspan. You start to get that airplane out there past a mile, past 2 miles, it gets to be a dot pretty quick. So one of the things you'll notice as you're learning this and practicing this is to be a good fighter pilot, you've got to have two really good things. You got to be able to see really well. If you got your glasses on and you tweak out the prescription just right, you got to have to see 20/20. If you can tweak it up a little more and get it to 20/15, great. There are some guys out there and gals out there that may have 20/10. It is a serious advantage to have extra visual acuity, and because these things get so small so fast. But we're going to stay in relatively close. So Marchetti at a mile or two, yeah, he's pretty small. He's not quite a dot yet, but he's just a black spot out there on the horizon. And we're going to call when ready. So if I'm leading this fight, I would say, hey, we're ready, right? And I would wait for my wingman to acknowledge me. If he's given his client a quick rundown on what's going to happen and getting him tooled up, he may miss that. He said, then I'll ask him again in a few seconds. Hey, we're ready, right? And he'd say, roger that, we're ready, left. And I'd say, we got one finger in the camera, over the shoulder on, good red lights, we're coming at you for a left-to-left pass. Oh my gosh, what does that mean? So first thing I do is I put one finger in the camera, which means I want to sync the cameras. So I'm planning this for the debrief. So I got one finger up in the camera to help us find dogfight number one, because it's going to be pretty difficult to distinguish the difference between dogfight one and dogfight two later down the road. So in the debrief back at the base. So we got one finger in the camera to find dogfight number one. While I'm saying that, my wingman is also putting one finger in his camera so we could find his dogfight number one. over-the-shoulder cameras coming on, so we go to the outside forward-looking camera so we can videotape the dogfight looking forward on both aircraft and the wide angle. Good red lights means we are recording. There's nothing more embarrassing than when you get back to your debrief and you realize that you forgot to turn on the tape deck and you missed the entire flight. So how do I know that? I'm not sure if I've ever missed that one, but I might have. So we try to avoid that embarrassing mistake. So over the shoulder on, good red lights means the tapes are rolling. We are coming at you for a left-to-left pass. And when we begin our turn towards each other, if I'm on the right and he's on the left, my initial turn will be to the left. His initial turn towards me, obviously, will be to the right. Now, we want to face each other, but we want to pass each other down each other's left side so that we can see each other clearly, and we know which side that the pass is going to be on. What you don't want is to be going head on and then not sure which side they're going to be passing on and then get everybody really nervous at the end. So we say left to left if it's looking like a left to left is doable and obvious. We prefer left to left because our clients are sitting in the left seats and they can see better. So we want you to be able to see the dogfight much better. We pass left to left 500 feet apart. For safety, there's some rules here. So we never get within 500 feet of each other when we're dogfighting. So left to left. And as we pass each other's wing line, we call out on the radio, fights on, and the other one will acknowledge, fights on. That means now it's time to start coaching your client. So from that point, now it's just a series of maneuvers to try to outrate. In other words, try to get your plane to turn faster than the other aircraft's turn rate. And if you're doing 13 degrees per second and they're doing 12, you're slowly eating away at their circle at 1 degree per second. That's pretty good. But you get a little crazy on the pull, you go to 14, you get a little buffet, the 14 becomes 9 and the other guy's sustaining 11. So really, the airplane that's able to achieve the highest sustained turn rate, which occurs at a pretty high level of G's, but not crazy. So if you sustain 3.8 to 4.2, somewhere in there, maybe 4.3 G's on your aircraft, you can sustain a really solid and effective turn rate without a nasty spike to 6 G's, spike to 14.9 degrees per second, and then, ooh, buff it down to 8, right? So if you sustain it, and it's just about that slow and steady grind to keep that sustained turn rate on for as long as you can to eat away at the other guy's circle until you can start to see him bleeding down, relaxing his pull, maybe losing sight, maybe taking some of his angle of bank out, maybe losing altitude, and you'll start to see a mistake happen. So in a lot of air-to-air combat, it's not just when I come in, I do this every time. It's when I come in, I'm going to see what the other guy's doing and I'm going to try to predict it. I'm going to try to react to it. I'm going to try to drive the fight. What I want to do is I want to get the other airplane to make a mistake. This is a lot like chess in a way. It's a three-dimensional chess game. And what we're doing is we're doing a big move and then see what the other guy does. Does he have the same move and skill set that you have, or does he make a mistake? So I do a big move, and then I see if it counters. And then I'll do another move and see if they counter. Then I might do a really, really wild move and said, oh, did he even notice that? And oh, he made a mistake, got him, right? So it could happen that fast. So move, counter move, move. Well, he countered it. That's okay. And see where he's at. Oh, he's a little slow. Whatever he did to counter me cost him heavily with the pull that he did or whatever. And now I've got an advantage on him. Now he's in trouble. So I like to think of it as setting myself up to optimize the performance that I have to wait for a mistake that the other airplanes are going to make. And if they don't make one, that's okay. I can beat him the old-fashioned way, but it's much easier, if you can, to do a beautiful first move, see if the other plane can match it, and if they can't, then you take advantage of that situation, and I say put them out of their misery. Put that pipper on and take that high-aspect gunshot. Now, the rules that we're talking about that keep us safe out there, we always honor the rules. There's a 500-foot bubble around the airplanes. We always pass left to left if we can. There's a bunch of rules. Nose high, goes high. If you go into the sun to the right, you come out of the sun to the right. Hard deck. An important one to be aware of when you're flying fighter planes is, what is the hard deck? And as we dogfight, visually, it is very difficult to see if you were flying at, in Marchetti's, we fly at, say, 6,000 feet down to 2,500 feet. It's difficult to see when you're at 5,000 feet visually, unless you look at the gauge or the altimeter. Difficult to tell the difference between 5 and 4. And it's hard to start noticing the altitude till you get pretty low. So what we want to do is after each big vertical move or each big straight down move, as you're cresting the top of the maneuver, check your altitude, because it's going to take possibly 1,000 to 1,500 feet to recover from a maneuver that incurs a straight down aspect to it. So I check the altitude at the top, I check it at the bottom. And when we cross through, when somebody notices we cross through the 3,500, this is at Fullerton when we're operating out of over Palos Verdes area, over the ocean, sea level now. When we go through 3,500 feet on the altimeter, which is 3,500 feet above the ocean, someone will call out, the first one to notice it will call out soft deck, and the other one will acknowledge, copy, or roger that, I'm at 3,500 as well. So they might call it soft deck as well. And this way that no one accidentally blows below the hard deck, which is 2,500 feet. First plane to fly through 2,500 feet, simulated rock skill. They pull up and they pose for the camera, for the shooter from the back to go ahead and take a shot of him visually. Now, I don't like the fight to end that way. To me, that feels like, well, yeah, you know what? I could have had you, but yeah, you flew into the hard deck, and now I get this really level kind of milquetoast kind of shot that it doesn't look good. So from a cinematography standpoint, getting back to Top Gun, never let the truth get in the way of a good story, right? We want the kill to look good. So if you're approaching the hard deck, doesn't it make much more sense to pull up at 2,600 feet? If you're losing anyway, pull up at 2,600 feet and just pull right up into a nice big climbing left. So you get lots of nice blue sky, lots of nice smoke, and we get a nice solid higher aspect looking kill than the level flat. Thanks for the kill. That's just my own personal perspective on that. So that is what we do, ladies and gentlemen, with the Air Combat USA business. And it's been going on for 34 years. Flew out of Fullerton for literally 31 years, 32 years. Air Combat is an amazing company. And it's something that very few people would have ever had the chance to do if it hadn't been for my dad inventing this thing. Now, he started it. If you get a chance to read it, I mentioned it, I believe, yesterday in the podcast 10, The Fighter Combat Tactics and Maneuvering. I looked for it again on Google today. It is available. Mostly it's on used. I think I saw it on eBay. Someone had a used one. I think there might have been a brand new one on Amazon. Possibly it was like $45. I think the original price of this thing was, let me see, what does it say on the back of mine? Not sure. I think it was 19 or I think it was like, wait a second. I got the receipt in the front from my dad. He bought his from Amazon years ago. Still has the receipt in there. Isn't that crazy? It was $26.37 in 2006. So that's when you got it, 2006. So it's still out there. Kind of tricky to find. It is an awesome book. And Robert Shaw, he's an airline pilot. I'm not sure if he's still flying. I'd love to get a hold of him. If anybody knows him, let him know that we totally love his book. Full credit for any quote that I might mention from that book could be coming up right now. He's found some gems over the years, and this book is like 400 pages, extremely technically accurate in a lot of different areas. And he goes to the trouble to try to find, I know there's a lot of fighter pilots that would, you know, say, well, there's no tactic that's really going to work. There's nothing that works in all conditions. It doesn't really, it's all about, it doesn't there's nothing that really works all the time, but you got to start somewhere. And he took the trouble to do that. So my hat's off to Robert Shaw for doing this book back in those days, when I'm sure it was difficult even then. With more modern technology, it's still it's a very complicated subject. One of his greatest quotes in the book is, "I'd rather be lucky than good any day." That's from an unknown fighter pilot. Luck plays a lot into the fighter pilot psyche, into the fighter pilot success rate. Being lucky is better than good, because you could have two pilots of exactly equal capability, exactly equal performance of aircraft, and the difference between winning and losing might be you just happen to start on the upsun side, and the guy lost sight for a second, and you took advantage of that 1 second, and that's the difference. Like, really? Like, I lost? How did I lose? Well, the sun. Sorry about your luck. That's the kind of small nuances that make the difference between winning and losing. He also says in the book, when you're asking two U.S. fighter pilots for their tactics in a given combat situation, you will likely receive three different answers or possible solutions and four different outcomes. And that is so true. And it makes me giggle a little bit, because as you're out there, this is such a contentious type of environment, and everybody wants to win. And the competitive feature that you see in Top Gun is pretty real in a lot of ways. Everybody wants to be the best, and everyone wants to win. And you can kind of feel that there's really no right answer to real combat. And the more experience you have in thinking through these problems and working through these resolutions and getting in close to another airplane and pulling the trigger and really opening fire with a real weapon and shooting shooting a missile off your aircraft or dropping a real bomb, all those things are so much more valuable than just talking about it, reading about it. So I totally understand it. I've never shot any weapons off of an aircraft. I know it would be exciting and amazing. I've practiced it my whole life. I wish I could. And if there's ever an opportunity to go fly a fighter plane and do a strafing run on an air-to-air banner or something and go see if any of these skills that I've practiced and honed in our simulated air combat world in the real airplane without real guns, I'd love to see that. So anybody out there that can get me a seat and a ride in anything that carries any kind of cool weapon, F-18, F-16, two-seater, we can go shoot the gun at some banner somewhere or air-to-ground strafing with the M-61, I would love that. Contact me right away. He goes into a really great description of what is a fighter. A fighter meaning a fighter plane. And the description he has is, it's any aircraft whose sole purpose is to destroy another airborne aircraft. He goes on to say, there are only two types of aircraft, fighters and targets. And he distinguishes that even planes that are designated fighter / attack. In other words, if your airplane drops bombs or shoots anything or drops anything into the dirt, you're a target. And that just makes you laugh, because our frontline fighter really is the F-18 right now. And it's going to be switching to other multi-role aircraft. So back in the 80s, there was this huge battle for who's flying fighters and who's flying targets. And Shaw picked up on that and makes me laugh a little bit, because if you have the A designation and you do any attack, dropping anything, any kind of multi-role, you're a target. That's hilarious. So those are some of the things that Shaw, here's another one that he mentioned. I got one more for you here. He's got an item here that says, what makes a successful fighter pilot? And the first thing he says, of course, is aggressiveness. It's a mental aggression and a willingness to engage a target and engage them with rage. It needs that aggression, that mental aggression. That fighter pilot mentality is very aggressive mentally, but it's mostly in the head. It's a mental aggression. not necessarily physical aggression. You want to be able to be mentally strong and aggressive there, but smooth and easy in the delivery and be able to make the plane look aggressive. And a lot of it is a psychological warfare. When you're out there dogfighting, I like this aspect of it. It's you're faking one thing and doing another. You're buying a reaction from the other aircraft. I show a big wing flash to show I'm putting my lift vector on you. I see you and I'm coming for you, right? And then the moment I can get the reaction that I want, I might roll the lift vector back to the blue sky and take it straight vertical. So I can buy a reaction with a very aggressive looking move and then conserve my energy with a big vertical move and come down on top of him after I get him to do something he didn't want to do and bleed the energy down that he didn't want to bleed. So I love that. I think aggressiveness mentally, yes. Show a lot of force, show a lot of aggression, keep that nose pressing him and so he could see your nose tracking towards him. The nose of your aircraft is the threat. The lift vector is how the nose gets there. So if the top of your airplane, the canopy of your aircraft is pointed straight at your opponent's cockpit, he knows that you see him and you're coming for him, and the nose is only 90 degrees behind that. So that is very, very intimidating, and that gets a reaction that maybe you want. Of course, you're going to be smiling and chuckling as you get him to do something, and he's over there you know, frowning and panicking if it's not looking so good for him because he's bled down and now he's in trouble. So I love that. Number one, aggressiveness. Number two, determination. The ability to harness the power within you to keep going when it's starting to suck. Like even when you're losing, even when you've made one of those fatal errors, and you know, if you played golf, you hit the bad ball and now you've got a bogey. And it's easy to get upset, but don't let yourself get upset. So when you make a mistake, know that the other guy's struggling too. He might make a mistake too. So, you know, it's a lot like tennis, you know, when you get behind and you hit one into the net, you go, oh man, I'm losing now. Don't worry, the other guy's suffering too. He might make a mistake as well. So stay with it. Don't give up. Be patient is the third one that Shaw recommends. Patience is a virtue in combat as well. And patience is hard to have as a fighter pilot. It's hard to have in life. We don't like patience. We want our shot and we want it now. And patience will come. And in it, with patience, you'll get your opportunity, hopefully. And the opportunities in combat are very small. So you're patiently looking for a tiny, tiny, tiny window to be able to squeeze a little more, like we talked about yesterday, angle of attack off your wing, get a touch more lift out of it, stay out of the buffet, but a touch more lift to get that nose around the corner, to press the pipper onto his aircraft, move it slightly ahead of him for a little lead, and open fire. And if you do nothing else, at least you got their attention that you're in a firing position, you're close. So patiently wait for your windows and execute and move when you can. And the last one that he mentions in this area is keep a cool head. So we talked about that. I kind of combined it with the first one that I do. Cool head is don't get angry. It's keep your mind calm. And the way you stay calm is to practice this a lot, because this environment is very stressful and it can be something that's overwhelming, and you could get ahead of yourself. You can get flustered. You can get irritated. You can get a little disoriented. So keeping cool comes with a lot of experience, and this way you can do better in the dogfight. An experienced fighter pilot, an older fighter pilot, and this is another one of his, an experienced older fighter pilot must often outweigh physical strength and quicker reflexes of youth. So what we're saying here is the older fighter pilot uses his wits. He uses his the experience far outweighs the brute force. The guy who can just pull 9 Gs isn't going to last very long, mentally or physically. The Gs hurt, and with a lot of Gs, you can really, really tucker yourself out You can G-lock, you can G-induced loss of consciousness, you could black yourself out, or you can injure yourself. I know a lot of fighter pilot guys that have injured their necks, getting their head into the wrong spot when the stick comes back and they get a lot of G's with the head turned, you could tweak your neck. So being smarter is much better than just being able to tolerate the pain more. You'll wish you had taken it a little easier earlier on. Get smarter with your tactics and your finesse moves that you can do, looking aggressively without actually trying to injure yourself. So that's what I have for you today. We'll do another episode on combat, maybe a little bit more down the road. I just wanted to introduce you to the air combat world and how I got into playing with fighters. Again, I'm not a real fighter pilot. I will bring one on to the show for an interview who actively flies F-18s. I've got a couple in mind. I'll dig into my phone book a little bit, and I'll put them up there. I haven't had a chance to reach out. I've been kind of busy. But once I get that opportunity, I'll put on a fighter pilot. We'll talk about flying combat with their current fighter, which is probably going to be an F-18. Versus what it's like flying the Marchetti, and talk about the similarities and differences of those in a future episode. But until that time, as my dad would say, keep on flying. You've been listening to Taking Flight with Michael Rocket Blackstone. We'll see you.